The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
Day 14 of the World Cup and the planet sheds a tear as Italy, world champs and secretly everyone's favourite side, go out through international conspiracy thing. Full story to follow. But while the Azzurri pack up the hairdryers, the invisible yellow cards, the map and compass for finding their way towards goal, others march on to glory. Slovakia, the side with more vice than even John Terry. Paraguay, Netherlands and Japan, who had the Danish for breakfast. The pod rounds up the day's highlights, ponders your post and then has a quick think about what's up on Friday. What's going to happen when 7-goal Portugal take on Brazil? Will Spain be the latest European giants to make an early exit? Who knows? But in the meantime, here's World Cup Daily. So then, day 14 of South Africa on board today. Barry Glendenning and Tom Lutz of The Guardian and also Josh Widdicombe of The Guardian. And also, I think I'm right saying Leicester's funniest man. No?
Yeah,
scientists agree.
Man.
Yeah, good.
I've only been there once, but...
Right.
That's how funny you are. You only went once and you're still the funniest person in Leicester.
Dear. Everyone's playing nice, though, this evening, which is good.
Well, I should comment. Josh won the Leicester Mercury New Act of the Year award. A prize I failed to win. I came second or third in it when I used to do stand-up comedy.
Is it a global award then, this, Josh?
It's national.
Well, this chap's Canadian.
Yeah, it's global.
Right, okay. All right, then. And you really don't want to give us any of your award-winning material?
No, I think this is probably not the time.
All right.
It may be.
And not today as well. Who wants to laugh on a day like this? Certainly not I.
You're very hoarse, Jimbo. It's almost as if you spent the afternoon shouting abuse at Howard Webb while watching a football match on
television.
Not
Howard Webb. Not much at Howard Webb. I think the hoarseness is mainly from Qualiadada's goal, which I took 2 or 3 minutes to understand was offside, mainly because I had left the room and was conducting a Marco Dardelli-esque run through the various rooms of Casa Jimbo. Shouting,
Didn't he shout his own name? Were you shouting Jimbo?
No, I don't think he shouted anything. I was just, you know, shouting. And, that was a bit of a come down when I came back to the room convinced that Italy had equalised in my impartial journalistic fashion, just because it made a good story. And lo and behold, they hadn't. Dynamo Biddenham says, podcast gold ahoy, as Jimbo tries to explain how his beloved Azzurri finished below. Yes, below a side of bank clerks. And then he gets a bit nasty about New Zealand. And Barry, to eat lashings of humble pie, explaining just how EBJT, England's brave John Terry, was a hero and had, wait for it, a good game. He did have a good game, didn't he, on Wednesday?
Yeah, I said before the tournament he would be a liability.
Yeah,
and he's,
you also said
he's been a liability twice already, nearly giving away a goal with a sloppy back pass and that press conference.
But, yeah, but you also said you'd never seen him have a good game for England. Have you now? Would you concede that's a good game for England from John Terry?
Yeah.
Good. We can move on. Closure. Excellent. Do you two boys want to have your stat off now about the day's action?
No, yeah. We'll throw them in as if they're ad-libbed.
All right.
Yeah, because then we won't say anything for the rest of the show.
All right. Note to listeners, Josh and Tom have the same stats. Let's see who comes
out. They were my stats first. I forwarded them to him because I didn't think I was going to be on tonight.
All right, then. Italy.
Yes.
Are we going to start there?
I've got a stat.
Does anyone want to play their joker?
Okay.
Okay, let's have it, Tom.
The Italians had 6 shots on their goal.
Yes.
In the entire tournament, and yet they conceded 5 goals.
You're joking.
Yeah, which maybe means they...
That's awful, isn't it? I mean, can we actually... We should start off by saying well done to Slovakia, nation of 5 million, first ever tournament, and they are through to the last 16, and looking like a team transformed from their first 2 games, probably because Italy was so abject. They made them look good. The first... 60 minutes from Italy, utterly anemic. The Italian press, as you can imagine, absolutely up in roar, is it? I'm not sure, but they're very, very upset. The common word on all the headlines is vergogna, shame, disgrace, and Lippi's to blame, and I think that's right.
And where does he go from here? I mean, it's not...
Well, he goes back to his fishing boat and goes fishing for a bit.
Okay. Forever, he's not a young man anymore.
No, he's not. I mean, he might quite happily retire after this. Some... might say that in many ways he had retired already, because that's the thing, and that's one of the charges laid against him, is that he came back, he quit after the 2006 World Cup win, and then came back after Donadoni, but never apparently had the intention of properly building a new side. It was just about kind of dusting off what he had before.
Well, the first rule of podcasting and stand-up comedy is always leave them wanting more.
Right.
Now, I think Lippi has left the Italian fans wanting a lot more, so it might be a good time to bow out.
Well, in a way as well, because the cruelest thing about their performance against Slovakia was the last 20 minutes when they threw off the covers and actually showed what they could have done. Because they played some excellent football in the last 20 minutes.
They were terrified.
That's what Lippi says, yeah.
Yeah, he said that they played with terror in their heart.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, because I think one of the things about Lippi is he's always been about the group. And there are various talented players, maybe not world beaters, but certainly talented enough to get into a side that has Iaquinta and Pepe in it, that didn't make the journey because Lippi was concerned about how their personalities might affect the group, Balotelli and Cassano principally. But this fear of the personality has led him to have a group with no personality at all, and you could see this through the first two games. He didn't help by the fact that he has changed his tactics all the way through the run-up to this and all the way through the tournament as well. So you started now with a new group of players that hadn't really played together in a new formation without really an on-field leader, and Cannavaro never really did that job. De Rossi, who when he finished the national anthem today and let out a roar, I thought, yes, game on, in my impartial journalistic fashion, and played the worst game of his career, I think. So the pressure was on. Lippi says he takes responsibility, and he should do, because that was his job as the manager to, apart from all the tactical things, apart from the selection things, if Quagliarella was in that kind of form, why didn't he spot that on the training field? Why didn't he put him on instead of Gilardino the whole time? But apart from anything else, the mental state of these guys, they just didn't look up for it for the first 60 minutes. They looked like they couldn't wait to get on the plane home. And then the last 20 minutes,
with the welcome that's awaiting them, the last thing they'd want to do is get on the plane home.
I don't think it's going to be that. I think that the 2006 win will buy the national team a lot of credit for a while yet. I mean, everyone's going to be hugely disappointed. But the thing is that Italy went into this tournament, we were talking about this last night, with massively low expectations. Nobody thought this team was up to much. They hadn't had a single win all year. And also, when they went to South Africa for the Confederations Cup last year, it was almost as big a shambles then, almost lost to New Zealand, then got beaten by the States. And everyone kind of heard the alarm bells ringing. When they saw Lippi pick more or less the same team to go out this time, I think everyone thought, the jig's up. Maybe it'll all come good, but it didn't. Even Radio Padania, who were from separatist north of Italy, Padania, they had been rooting against Italy. And indeed, Umberto Bossi, the Padania leader, even said, they bought the game. You watch, a couple of Slovakian players will turn up in Serie A next year. Even they said that they were very disappointed for the Italians everywhere.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Producer Ben wants to say that this isn't the worst defence of the world title ever, because France were even worse in 2002 when they failed to even score a goal. But they didn't finish below New Zealand in a group. I mean, really. Did you have a question, Ben?
Well, I was going to ask you, is a small part of you, or all of you then, glad that Gigi Buffon has not been tainted by association with this rabble because he went out injured at half-time in the first match?
Well, you know, it's one thing about all this is that everyone says, oh, Lippi, you shouldn't have taken... Yeah, he had two blocks of players. One were the 2006 World Cup winners. The other were a block of players from Juventus who were traumatised from their disastrous season, so not the best. But to be fair to Lippi, if he had been able to use more of his 2006 squad, like Pirlo and Buffon, I don't think they would have gone out. Yeah, they still wouldn't have been a particularly impressive side, but I think Buffon would have avoided the third goal from Slovakia. I mean, the others maybe not, because it wasn't particularly Marchetti's fault, the others. But that one, I thought, yeah. But, you know,
well, Buffon. There were six shots on goal. Five goals conceded.
That's a fantastic stat, Tom. Yeah. I hope there's more where that came from.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, well done to Slovakia, Paraguay as well, and New Zealand. Of course, Paraguay and New Zealand played out a 0-0 draw, watched by one person, Barry Glendening.
Yes, I think I'm the only person in the world who watched that game. And it was pretty dull. New Zealand deserve a huge amount of credit for going through the group unbeaten. But I think they will go home disappointed that they left this match behind them. All they needed to do was score and win to top the group. And they failed to do so, and they didn't create much. There was no real urgency about them, almost as if the players didn't realise that a goal would send them to the top of the group and into the next round. So, as I say, while they deserve a huge amount of credit, they will be upset that they didn't win this game.
Mm. All right. Slovakia, how do you think they're going to fare in their game against Holland? Because they looked impressive, didn't they? Vitek and that man Hamzic as well, who finally started doing what he was supposed to be able to do.
And Holland have actually, they've won their group with 100% record. They haven't been particularly convincing
no.
any of the games I've saw. They beat Cameroon, who aren't a particularly good side. Denmark, they were unconvincing against them.
You sound very depressed, Don.
Well, I'm just a really big Italy fan.
At a low ebb.
Vitek's now the joint top scorer in the World Cup.
Oh, really?
Along with Higuain. And I'm thinking that Honda might be up there as well. He got one tonight, didn't he? Did he not have two before? Well, let's come on to that game then. Japan, 3-1 winners over the Danes. Loads of posts about this. Siant 4, had Honda's attempted bicycle kick gone in, would it have been a triumph? And if you like that, you're going to enjoy this. Thrillmeister, by the way, what a pair of free kicks, particularly the first one. Now, that is something that Honda will want to recall. Badum.
Interestingly, there's been four goals scored from free kicks, one of which was a fluke. But three of them have been scored by teams from the Far East, one by South Korea, two by Japan. And Japan came perilously close to getting a hat-trick of free kicks tonight. They rattled one off the post, but that was more through Thomas Sorensen having a shocker than the quality of the free kick.
Well, it was a very impressive performance from the Blue Samurai. To find out how it went down back home in Japan, let's join Justin McCurry, the Guardian's correspondent in Tokyo. Justin, what time of day is it there with you?
It's 6:30 in the morning.
Wow.
The game started at 3:30, and I've just looked out of my window. People are beginning to make their way to work, probably having watched the game in a bar somewhere or at home like me.
Was this game huge over there, even at that time of day?
It was, yes. I mean, I, as I said, I've been watching from home, but I could hear the yelps and screams of my neighbours every time Japan either scored or came close to scoring or looked like they might concede a goal. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say that quite a lot of Japan got up early this morning to watch the match, and it was worth getting up for in the end. Just an amazing result.
And how is their campaign going down? There was a lot of talk when they arrived about how their form had been horrible. Imagine expectations were pretty low.
They were. I think the coach, Takeshi Okada, was the only person in Japan who was predicting that Japan would make it beyond the group stage. Most people thought that they'd be home quite early on in the tournament, particularly as they were they've been in quite a tough group with Holland, Cameroon, and Denmark. And they've sort of done an England in reverse, I suppose. They had a horrible run up to the tournament. They had four straight defeats, including that farcical game against England. And then their most game they played immediately before the final started was a 0-0 draw against Zimbabwe. So yes. Expectations were pretty low, but then there was that shock win against Cameroon, again another a goal from Keisuke Honda, and then a narrow defeat to Holland. So yeah, people went into this game today against Denmark really thinking that it might be possible to qualify for the last 16.
Well, now you've got an easy-ish route to the semi-finals, because if you can get past Paraguay, then it's USA or Ghana. So this story looks set to run and run. Who's the big star out there at the moment of this Japanese side? Who gets the endorsements?
Well, there are a few, but I think Keisuke Honda, who scored that goal against Cameroon and again tonight, has really emerged as a new star for Japan. He's sort of relatively unknown, partly because he's spent quite a lot of his career playing overseas. He's played in Holland, now plays for CSKA Moscow. I mean, he made his international debut a couple of years ago, scored his first goal just over a year ago, but sort of an unknown quantity, but he's come into form just at the right time. And he was interviewed immediately after the game finished this morning, I should say, Japan time. And, of course, there was the inevitable question, how do you feel? And he comes across as quite a serious young man. He said he wasn't nearly as happy as he thought he would be because, you know, Japan has qualified for the last 16 and they've got work to do. They've got this game against Paraguay and, as you say, you know, really a realistic chance of getting through to the quarterfinals and then perhaps even to the semis, which will make me eat my words because I was among the many people to have criticised Okada, the coach, for saying that Japan could actually reach the semi-finals.
Brilliant. Justin, that's excellent stuff. Thank you very much for that, and I hope you struggle through the rest of the day well.
Yes, got lots of Guardian work to do today, but I expect I'll be snoozing in front of my Mac at about 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Just like the people back at the office. Marvellous. Okay, nice one, Justin. Thanks very much. Have a nice one. There you go, Justin McCurry in Tokyo. And notice most programmes in the middle, they have a quick chat about England, the latest from the training camp and that. Barry, what's the latest from the training camp there?
I haven't a clue what the latest from the training camp is. I would presume Fabio Capello is on his knees imploring the 23 men in front of him to actually take their fingers out and do something in a game.
You can imagine that just on cloud nine.
Yeah.
Because they play, beat Slovakia.
Yeah, he couldn't believe it.
You can only beat the teams in front of you. And to be fair...
Well, England haven't. That was...
Right. Post then. DMVDC, amongst other things, posting a lovely link to Americans celebrating an American goal, which is actually really quite moving. Some of these scenes of packed bars, watching in anticipation as the seconds tick by, and then Mandon Donovan scores, and they all go crazy. All over America. It's wonderful to see.
Did they cut to like a redneck bar in Fife, Alabama?
Believe me, there's 10 or 12, or maybe 11, I'm not sure, different locations. It's a New York Times website that the link takes you to, and you can see more or less the same scenes all over the place. There's a certain amount of USA, but it's quite touching stuff all the same. Yeah.
Could we all agree Landon Donovan's been one of the players of the tournament so far? Yeah. I remember he played a Champions League match for Bayer Leverkusen, which I described in a minute report as possibly the worst performance by a professional footballer I'd ever seen, where he was clearly out of his depth. And
it's a very hurtful thing to say, Barry.
Yeah, well, probably, but it was true. He was having a terrible time of it, but he's really come good, and he's been excellent.
He's been on a heck of a journey, as he was explaining to the reporters straight after the final whistle yesterday.
Byron Rowney did a good impression of
him. He did, which made the cutting room floor. But he was in tears as the guy said to him, you know, what does this mean to you? And he said, well, you know, it just makes me believe that there is good in the world and stuff. And it's wonderful, you know. It's nice to have that kind of drama.
You spurred him on, Bass.
Yeah.
Probably read you minute by minute.
Yeah. In his personal life, I mean, beyond Barry, there's been one or two other hurdles to clear.
He was married to some actress who's quite the fox. She's in a bad sitcom that I can't remember the name of.
Right.
Anyway.
Producer Ben is in real time researching this bit of Barry research. Anyway, while he does that, let me just say that opinion is a little bit divided on whether America has woken up to the beautiful game.
Does it matter whether America wakes up to the beautiful game? You know, there's enough of them interested to be quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
If the rest of them prefer NASCAR or football or baseball to soccer, as they call it, does that matter?
I take your point. It's just that after years of slagging it off and regarding it as a bit of a European or foreign joke, it's nice to see them coming around to the rest of the world's point of view. And I was just intrigued when, for example, Suchev posts in saying that he was at City Field, which is home of the New York Mets baseball team, and in the middle of the first inning, they showed the clip of Donovan scoring the winner against Algeria on the big screen there, and the entire stadium erupted, which at a baseball game, it's just interesting, no? So it filtering through.
I do have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about this, that why are English people, and I think it's only English people, so determined to make Americans like football? Why do they crave this validation from this nation of Yanks, many of whom...
American. My dad's American.
And how does he feel about your chosen profession, Tom? Does he say, I have...
Well, I'm sure he thinks Tom is a huge disappointment.
No.
For many reasons.
Tom, yes. Your parents are American.
My dad is, yeah.
Your father's American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence your American accent. Yeah, man, right? Yeah.
So, well, tell us.
Well, he actually wants England to win. Well, England, USA, he wanted England to win. And his words were, because nobody in America cares.
All right.
Whether USA win or not.
All right.
And he's been proved wrong. First time.
That Landon Donovan partner that Barry was mentioning, Bianca Kaljic from the TV show Rules of Engagement. I think they are no longer together. Ben insists they're not officially divorced, according to some website he's dredged up, but there you go. If you're in Los Angeles...
Puddy from Seinfeld is also in that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. But you don't like Seinfeld.
It's not that I don't like it. I just haven't ever watched it.
I'm quite jealous of that because you have it all ahead of you, and I've seen it all.
Right. Yep. Christian T says, I don't care about the outcome of England v Germany, but please, please let it go to penalties. I remember Christian T was that cheery chap from Vienna.
All right.
Yes, yes. Now, hello to you, Christian T. Occidental tourists, don't get down about England finishing second in the group. It's actually Capello's master plan to not only win the World Cup, but exercise England's demons on the way. First, we beat Germany on penalties. Then Argentina are dumped out, thanks to Rooney's Hand of Shrek goal. Against Portugal in the semi-final, the entire team stamp on Cristiano Ronaldo's testes while winking at the camera. And in the final, Brazil are stunned by a free kick floated in back from just outside England's penalty area. There you go. Owen Moby Bad says, seriously, why such little Ghana? Somebody else posted and said, I bet it's because they haven't got a Ghana correspondent. As if. They'll be playing USA in the next round. I bet we have a big bumper Ghana preview on that, just to show you.
Can I ask you an Italy question?
Go on, please do, Tom.
Is there any sense that Italy will be supporting England now? Because that's their...
Why?
Their only link now is Capello.
Oh, Fabio Capello. I don't think so, really. I don't think Fabio Capello is a particularly... If it was Trapattoni, I think they'd get a bit more excited about it. But Capello is such a cold fish that... and he's distanced himself as well to quite an extent from Italy. He's made some pretty frank remarks about the state of Italian football and that.
He was right as well.
Well, yeah, but not just on a national team level, but in terms of the infrastructure. So, things that are indeed right, you know, observations he was quite... that were quite fair to make. But I don't think that there's that level of kind of... personal support for him that, say, Trapattoni would have.
Right.
Yeah, we kind of glossed over the Holland-Cameroon game.
Did we?
Yeah, a couple of things I know from doing the minute. Arjen Robben got his first run out of the tournament, and he was absolutely magnificent.
Really?
Set up a sensational goal, latched onto a brilliant pass from Wesley Sneijder, and curled it round the keeper off the upright, and Klaas Van Huntelaar scored with the just slotted into the empty net. And also a big shout out to Rigobert Song, who came on to appear in his fourth World Cup finals.
It's amazing, isn't it? How old is he?
Officially 33.
I'd say he's
in
older.
In Cameroon years, I'd say over 40.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks a lot over 40.
David Moyes got pulled up for racism for saying much the same thing about Yakubu a while back, but I don't think it's racist, it's just funny, you know, that Rigobert Song is quite clearly not 33.
Right. Either that or he's been doing some living.
But have you seen him?
Yes.
Mark Lawrenson said, and fair play, actually made me laugh out loud, is here comes Neptune, because all he's missing is the trident and the crown made from seashells. He has the beard and the blonde dreads. Yeah, so, you know, hats off to him. If he'd got sent off tonight, he would have got sent off in three different sets of World Cup finals. So I'm kind of sorry he didn't notch up that
maybe next
landmark
time.
Achievement. Mm. Maybe next time when he's 37.
He's 37, yeah. Yeah. And do you think this workmanlike, which is the adjective that's been bandied around to describe Holland so far, are going to be transformed by the arrival of Robin?
Yes. They were transformed when he came on tonight, and a fella called Eliar Elia came on as well, who I know nothing about, but he's another speed merchant. And when the two of them came on, they absolutely just wreaked havoc in the Cameroon defence, because up to that point, Cameroon had actually been dominating for most of the second half. They really wanted to win tonight, and they didn't, so they go home with no points.
Excellent. Well, that's Holland then, who'll be playing Slovakia in the next round. Now, Friday, we get to see the last two groups having their final games. In Group G, Brazil are already qualified. Portugal are in second place. Ivory Coast are third on only 1 point. Portugal have four. Ivory Coast now need to beat the bottom place team, North Korea, and rely on Brazil to do them a whopping favour and really hammer Portugal, because they need not only to win and hope that Portugal lose, but they also need a 10-goal swing on the goal difference. So that doesn't look... You know, Portugal basically can lose 5-6-0 and still not worry too much.
It's a shame that this is a semi-dead rubber, really, because when you looked at the first rounds when the fixtures came out, this looked like the highlight of the first round.
Mm.
And unfortunately, Portugal would really need to mess up to go out.
I think Ivory Coast really missed their chance in the first game against Portugal, because Portugal weren't anything, really, in that game. And Ivory Coast should have taken it to them rather than just playing a cagey opening match and hoping that they beat North Korea by more than Portugal could.
Yeah. And that famous short corner at the end that everyone was mystified by, last kick of the game. And yeah, very, very strange. Brazil, no Kaká, of course, who's suspended. And I think Alano is unlikely to be risked after his injury in the which game was that? Ivory Coast.
Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a bad reflection of Mark Hughes that he wasn't able to get a tune out of Alano and Rubino, but they're both playing very, very well for Brazil?
Well, no.
Sorry,
thanks
I
for coming tonight.
Well, I think it's quite hard
my
to
my name's Josh Widdicombe. You've been great. Good night.
Mark Hughes isn't the first manager not to get the best out of Rubinho.
Yeah.
I don't really think you can blame Mark Hughes for that.
No, Mancini didn't do anything with Rubinho either. It was he was just never going to be happy at Man City, was he? Didn't
Sven as well started
place.
Off quite enthusiastic about Alano, but by the end of the season had dropped him too.
Okay.
Meantime,
those were three very satisfactory answers.
They were.
Including my no.
Group H, meantime, is delicately poised with Chile on 6 points, Spain and Switzerland on 3, but Spain one better off on the goal difference, and Honduras are down there on 0. Switzerland favourite to beat Honduras, are they? If they are, that means Spain certainly need to win to be sure of going through. Enough of my yakking. Here's the Cid. Who was just about to go on telly when I spoke to him earlier for Gol TV in Barcelona.
Were you jealous?
I just rang up to see if... And he happened to answer the phone. And anyway, I began, Barry, by asking him what they'd be discussing that evening.
Well, because of the nature of the programme we do, I'm sort of reasonably glad to report that probably everybody will be on Spanish TV's agenda because it's a show that kind of, in theory at least, takes everybody seriously and looks at things properly. But obviously tonight, then Italy will very definitely be on the agenda, not least because, as I think you know, because we've talked about this before, there's no one the Spanish love to hate more than the Italians, and they will be absolutely delighted at Italy going out and Italy going out in the slightly pathetic fashion that they did. So that will certainly be on the agenda. Of course, Spain will be on the agenda, and in particular, how they're going to approach this game against Chile. And I think one of the key things in all of this is that something I said coming into the tournament has actually turned out to be complete rubbish. And I was saying that the success of the European Championships really reinforced a footballing identity for Spain and made everybody think that you have to play tiki-taka and it's great and isn't this brilliant and everyone's going to stick by it. But by being beaten by Switzerland and by playing, according to some, not particularly well against Honduras, there's been a little bit of a question mark. There's been one or two question marks about whether the style is the right one, and one or two question marks from the other side of the fence, which is Del Bosque actually selling us short on our style? Is he actually letting us down because he's going for an extra central midfielder in Sergio Busquets, because he's going for a wide midfielder in, or more to the point, an out-and-out winger in Jesus Navas, in a system that supposedly at least doesn't have a place for those players? So that's certainly a big part of the debate going into this game against Chile. Of course, it will all be forgotten if they play brilliantly and wipe the floor with Chile, but they are worried about it. They are genuinely worried about this.
Does this tie in with the Aragonés Del Bosque row?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And where do you...
And that's an interesting one as well, because Aragonés... And I actually think Aragonés had a point. Right. Aragonés said after the first game that Spain had played poorly, that they lacked competitiveness, they lacked intensity, and they lacked a little bit of fight. And then after the second game, when they'd had those things, most of the media said, well, they had too much of that and they didn't have enough pausa, enough pause, enough calmness with the ball, and enough tiki-taka. In fact, one paper said there was plenty of tiki, but where was the taka? And then after the second game, Aragonés came out and said quite clearly, well, I'm just not at all convinced by this team now. Del Bosque, as always, has acted with real decorum and has tried not to fight back. He did turn around and say, and it's a very significant phrase this in Spain, of course, because of its history, it did turn around and say, there are not two Spains. And then, brilliantly, James, he used the word caveat. He said, no one has a monopoly on footballing styles or in footballing approaches. You can win in lots of ways. Football is a game full of caveats.
Well, isn't that so very much the case? It's not like they didn't create chances, though. So stylistically, I thought Spain was still really impressive in the second game. It was just that Torres's finishing made perhaps them look a bit worse than they actually were. But it's an interesting game.
Well, that's the thing that Del Bosque's saying, James. He's talking a lot about, well, look, we created chances, we wasted chances. Presumably Torres wasn't wearing his Nike Total Free Laser 90s or whatever they were called.
Or whatever they were called, yeah.
With their power pods and special fins.
Yes. Tell us more about Chile while you're on the phone, Sid, because, of course, one or two key players for them are more than familiar to you. Humberto Suazo, who plays for Real Zaragoza, who's looking a little, some distance from match fitness at the moment.
Yeah, but Humberto Suazo always looks some distance from match fitness, even when he is match fit. One way of maybe illustrating him is that he's basically a bit fat and round, but he's not really. He's big boned, to use the South Park phrase. There's a very famous gossip magazine mainstay in Spain, a guy called Paquirin, who's the son of a former, well, in fact, a current opera singer. And he's basically famous for being fat and useless. Now, when Humberto Suazo first turned up at Zaragoza, all the Zaragoza fans were chanting Paquirin, Paquirin at him, calling him Paquirin. They now love him because he scored some very important goals. He is a very good player. And I think his physical shape is actually a little bit full. So I don't think he is fat. I just think he's a very kind of chunky guy, and he's very barrel-shaped. He's a good player, and he may well give him the goals that perhaps other players couldn't give him, because I think they've missed a lot of chances, Chile. I like the way they play. Obviously, Mark Gonzalez playing is significant for Liverpool fans, because they never really saw that at Liverpool, but he'd been very, very good indeed at Real Sociedad and reasonably good at Albacete when he was in Spain. So they're significant. And there's a stylistic question, I think, for Spain. Spain believe that Chile might be good for them because they'll come and attack and leave space. I wonder if there's another side to that, another way of looking at it, which is that Chile put a lot of pressure on very high up the pitch. Now, if you put pressure on Xavi Hernandez, Xavi Alonso, David Silva and Andres Iniesta, they'll find a way around you because they're brilliant on the ball and they'll get into space behind you. But if you put that pressure on a little bit higher up the pitch and you put it on Sergio Busquets to some extent, but particularly on Joan Capdevila, particularly on Carlos Puyol, and on the right back, who looks like it might be Arbeloa because we're not sure about the fitness of Sergio Ramos, then I think Spain may have problems bringing the ball out.
Well, it is a risk. Switzerland, of course, playing Honduras, and given that they're level on points, and given that they're probably favourites to beat Honduras, if Spain were to draw against Chile, that could be adios muchachos.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Spain are in a position where they think they absolutely have to win, because a draw is enough for Chile, although the good news is that Chile's players are saying that they won't play for a draw because they don't know how to, and I actually think they might be telling the truth. And the assumption, as you rightly say, is that Switzerland probably will beat Honduras. However, I'd quite like to see Switzerland try and attack for once, and I'm not actually sure how good they'll be at it.
Well, there you go then. The other game in this group, of course, is Honduras-Switzerland. Sid, they're casting doubt over how capable Switzerland would be of actually taking the game to the opposition.
Switzerland are exceptionally dull.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to have really taken against the Swiss. Yeah. I mean, John Ashdown, who's a regular and a pod here, is possibly the most amiable, mild-mannered man I've ever met. And he hates them. And for a country that's, you know, quite dull and nobody has a problem with, you know, notoriously neutral, they've really created a lot of enemies in this World Cup campaign.
Because football's not about neutrality, and the place that they occupy is a place they're denying somebody else, and I think that's the problem.
I think no one's ever forgiven them for that terrible game against Ukraine 4 years ago, which I don't know why it cast such a shadow over the World Cup.
It was
because,
awful. The World Cup started to turn in 2006 because it had been quite a good first round up until then, and then Switzerland ruined the whole World Cup.
And that's
Swiss.
Carried on into this one.
Yeah, they ruined this
World
Cup. They
basically ruined this one as well.
Right.
Damn you, the Swiss.
And they'll probably knock Chile out by beating Honduras. Spain will beat Chile. And then the most entertaining side in the first round of the first round will be out.
So what you would like to see, Tom, and many others perhaps, would be Switzerland failing to get a result against Honduras so that both Chile and Spain can go through. Do you think that's going to happen, though?
No, I think Switzerland will beat Honduras 1-0. I think Spain will beat Chile 1-0.
Right.
And we'll hopefully Switzerland will get thrashed in the next round.
I would be absolutely astonished if that match between Spain and Chile only serves up one goal. I mean, we didn't really mention it the last day when Chile played, but they missed so many chances. Them against Spain, it could be like 15-14, the way both teams have been playing. Chile strikers really need to stop being so selfish and start passing the ball around when they've got a 3-on-1.
Wouldn't it be funny if there were more goals in Switzerland Honduras than there are in Chile Spain? I'm almost willing to put a bet on that's what'll happen. That's kind of weird, crazy thing.
I will have five of your English pounds with you that Spain v Chile.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. Okay. It's in front of the boys now. I can't back down. Oh dear. All right then, listeners. Well, we'll see how that one works out on Friday. What a day it looks set to be. You can hear the results and all of that and our special look forward to Big, Big Saturday with the first of the last 16 games around the same time tomorrow. So I do hope you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to Barry Glendenning, Josh Widdicombe, and Tom Lutz, and producer Ben, and you, the listener, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.